Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. This episode brought to you by my cat, Callie. Episode 179, App Clips in React Native with Janique and Dupissi.
Hey everyone, welcome to React Native Radio Podcast, where we explore React Native together. I'm your host, Jamin Holmgren. I'm joined, as always, by my three co-hosts. Hey, Harris. How's it going today?
Hey, Jamin. It's going good. Thanks for asking.
Good, good. Is it getting cold up in Montreal yet?
Yeah, it's actually starting to get pretty chilly here. So
it started actually this morning. It was kind of like frosty around here. What about you, Aditi? How's the Midwest?
It started to get cold again. Yeah, it definitely feels like fall now, so it's going to start dipping.
It feels like it just all of a sudden turned a corner, like, oh, it was the 21st, now it's the 22nd, it's time to get cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right around Halloween, it's going to be really cold here. I think they've been predicting snow next week here.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Okay. Well, we're a remote podcast, so I don't think you can call in that you can't get into the podcast recording.
No, I'd love to keep joining, so yeah.
Great. Robin, how are you doing? You're closer to me, so I assume you're seeing the same weather.
Yes, I'm in the same climate as you, and it did frost last night. We're going to have to winterize our hoses.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
Well, consider this is your reminder.
I'll be right back. And our awesome guest today is a guy that actually lives not very far from Harris, up in Montreal. Janique Duplessis. Did I say that correctly, Janique?
Yeah, it's close enough.
Close enough. Can you say it for people so that we get the right pronunciation?
Sure. With my best French-Canadian accent, it would be Janique Duplessis.
Okay, yeah, I really didn't hit that. But, you know, we'll pretend like I did. Really awesome to have you on today. Janique is the co-founder and lead developer of Third Wave, a website and app to find cafes and order coffee. I think it's up mostly in your area right now. It's kind of a startup.
Yeah. We're mostly in like Montreal and Canada right now.
Okay.
Slowly expanding. Like it's a local app. So like we're going city by city. And right now we're well established in Montreal and looking to expand like to the rest of Canada and then eventually the US. So
right.
In a city near you soon.
Yeah, that's awesome. Harris was telling us before the show that your app is a great way to find good neighborhoods, because if there's a Third Wave cafe in the area, that means it's a good neighborhood. Is that right, Harris?
Well, yeah, it was more for like if you're trying to buy real estate. I don't know how accurate this is, but I would say that if you have a Third Wave coffee in a neighborhood and people are buying $5 latte, then that's a good sign. It's going to appreciate. Yeah.
Janique is also a core contributor to React Native for over 4 years now, and the developer of the very popular, although I think people probably don't think about it all that often, React Native Safe Area Context. So we're going to be talking with him about that, but one of the big things we're going to be talking about is iOS app clips, and that's going to be a fun topic when we get there. But before we do that, Janique, can you tell us a bit about yourself, you know, where you grew up, how'd you get into coding, you know, how'd you get into open source?
Yeah, sure. I've always lived in Montreal, Canada, up there in the north. I was always interested in like computer video games and stuff as a kid. So I was like, I kind of want to do that for work later. I ended up studying computer science in like, here it's called Cégep. It's like before university. It's like this weird thing we have only in Quebec. So yeah, then after that, I started working for a company that does software for Cégeps. Kind of, it's kind of funny. Like I worked for a company that pretty much did all the software, like all the like email stuff, pretty much all the like online class stuff that there's now with COVID. We had some of it there, like where you could like end in homeworks and stuff like this, chat with your teammates. So that's how I got into app development with my internship there, and then I worked there also part time while going to university. It was nice. Like it was it's funny because I kind of got, it's how I got into like building infrastructure for apps. So like React Native, right? You use React Native to build apps. But there I was working on like their in-house like WebView-based framework for the mobile app, because the mobile app was just like a web view basically, and I was the one that was working with like both iOS and Android to like add the kind of bridging code to access the native feature from the web view. So like you'd think of like Cordova and all this stuff, like we had like a kind of our in-house thing like that. So that's how I got into like native development a little bit also, because like I never did like in school I learned like C sharp and like a little bit of JavaScript. So working there, I learned like JavaScript properly because it was like a JS app. It was this place where like everything was done in house. So they had their own JS framework. They had their own, like we wouldn't use like React or like anything, right? It was just like everything was like written. There was like almost no dependencies or whatever.
There's some value in doing that sometimes, even though usually it's not especially, you know, efficient.
Yeah, I mean, for me it was nice because I got to work on this kind of lower level like tooling stuff. But starting from scratch, I probably just use React though. But it was interesting for me, at least like out from school, and just like I was just starting off like my career, I guess. So yeah, I got to learn like JavaScript properly, also like a little bit of native for like Objective-C on iOS, and also Java and Android. So that actually, that was like a really, really good foundation for working on React Native later.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a very similar problem. So how did you, if you were kind of, doing a lot of your own stuff and not really using open source as much, how did you go from that to being an open source contributor?
Yeah, so basically, after 2 years, I started a consulting company with one of my friends. App Inflate actually still exists. I think you know Shal, right? Shal Vinet from App Inflow. I know Aris knows him.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, actually, we just chatted in July. We have a shared channel with App Inflow. I didn't actually realize that you were one of the co-founders of App Inflow. That's very cool.
He still runs the agency right now. So I started doing that. So when we got our first contract, we both quit university and our jobs, and we're like, let's do this. Like we're gonna do our own thing and do apps. So that's pretty much when actually I started contributing to React Native a little bit before. Like I don't know. I think I just saw like an article about it coming out when it was released, and like I wanted to try it. Actually, I remember. Yeah. So when I was in university, like it had the worst like web like services and whatever, like the email client was really bad, like everything was really bad. So I built an app with React Native to access my emails and my grades.
Wow.
So that was like just a little, you know, a personal project for fun. So that's when I saw React Native coming out, I was like, oh, that'd be a cool project to do when I was in
school.
Do you
remember what version of React Native?
Oh, that was like the first, pretty much. Well, I don't remember the actual number, but it was like literally when it came out. Like it's like in 2015, I think. I don't even know if there was Android support yet. Or maybe it was when Android came out, I'm not sure. But like it was just released. And actually that's when I made my first commit to React Native, because like there was a random, like, I think there was a crash, but it would crash the whole app instead of like popping up the red screen. So I fixed the native crash, so it wouldn't crash in native. It was to like just show the actual error.
I'm guessing there was a lot of low hanging fruit back then.
Yeah, I mean, it was, to be honest, it was so easy. Like if you wanted to like contribute, it was the best time to get into it.
Yeah, I would say much easier than it is now, where everything's pretty solid.
Yeah, right now it's, I mean, there's still some stuff, especially with like the new like rewrite that are coming out. But yeah, back then it was like so new that like pretty much you would find a crash just by using it. And like I don't know, I always like if I see something that crashes in my like dependencies or whatever, I'm not gonna just like go, I'm not gonna go file an issue in GitHub. I'm gonna try to find what the crash is and fix it, and then I'm just submitting a pull request straight away. That's always how I work and how I like pretty much did most of my work on React Native. I would just like use it for like my own products or projects. And then if I find an issue or I found like a feature that's missing, like sometimes it's just like, you know, there's a new thing. Like actually, I noticed something recently. It's there's like a new prop for the date picker on iOS. There's two styles now, but there's no prop to control it right now. So that'd be like a, right now, if you want to make a PR to React Native, go add the prop to control the style of the date picker, and everyone's gonna win.
So it all started with your university website being so bad. So thanks to them, you got into React Native.
Yeah, that can be it. Yeah. I don't know if I would have gotten in it anyways, but yeah, it was definitely a cool, like, I was, especially like back then when I was still in school and stuff, finding like little projects to do on the side. So that's kind of how I got into like open source and using this stuff.
Okay, we're going to move into our main topic. Before I do that, I'd like to mention that this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red, as always, the app and web consulting company that I am one of the founders of. We do React and React Native work. Of course, if you are interested in, if you're considering doing a React or React Native project, hit us up. You can email me directly, jamin@infinite.red, or just hit our main website. You can find a contact form there. And Missy, who is our sales coordinator, will respond to you. I'll see the email as well. We're not that big of a company. So, you know, you don't have to go through channels to find me. So you can find us online at infinite.red. So our main topic today is iOS app clips in React Native. And Janik actually has a very good perspective on this because he's done some kind of work around that. But before we get into the stuff that you've been doing, what exactly is an app clip? Because it's not something, I'm an iOS user and I don't exactly even know what an app clip is.
Yeah, so it's really new. It actually got released with iOS 14. So it's normal that probably most people haven't like used any. Like I haven't neither. I just saw the announcement at the mm-hmm. latest Apple conference, their dev conference. And I got really excited because the use case is like really good for the kind of stuff that we do at Third Wave. So they had like examples with Yelp, which is kind of similar in what we do. So what we do is we have like a digital loyalty card program for independent coffee shops. So they could have like just like this NFC chip or a QR code, and then you can scan it and then it will take you to the app. It won't even download the app. It will just like download like a lightweight version of the app. And then it's going to be more similar to like a website, pretty much. It will just download it right away, open it to like their loyalty card page, and then you could like claim your stamp and like start using the app without having the full app install. And then they kind of upsell you to like get the full app eventually if you like it. So it's like an in-between a native app and a website. There's also the same thing on Android. I don't remember the actual name.
Instant apps.
I think it's something like this. I haven't investigated that yet, but it's probably like the next phase. I wanted to try it with app clips because usually when like Apple does stuff, it actually gets traction. Sadly, sometimes with Android, they do these features and nobody uses them. So they've had instant apps for a while, but I haven't like seen much use. So yeah, we were trying to roll out like an app clip experience soon.
I actually had a question. What about like the way you described it, where if someone wants to use their loyalty card right away without downloading the app, like that sounds really cool. But what about authentication? How do you know who they are?
So it supports it's basically a full app. So it supports all the authentication methods that are normally available. So you could Apple tries to push sign in with Apple. Of course, they're like, oh, it works with sign in with Apple. So people could like just tap and create their account using Apple sign-in, or you could support your own, like create, you could create an account through the app. So yeah, so basically you would tap, you would get your card, and then you would either sign in through any of our like Facebook, Apple, or create your own account.
Gotcha. Okay, so you maintain your regular auth flow that you already had.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think I didn't get the part. Are you saying now this is integrated with React Native? Do we have app clip support there?
It's not integrated like 100%. App clips are actually just regular iOS apps. but they have restrictions on like size. So maybe I can get more into like details about like the stuff I had to do to like make it work better. But it supports, it's just a regular UIKit app. So you have like your app delegate, like it's just a regular React Native project would kind of work to be an app clip. But you want to make some additional optimizations usually to like make sure it stays small. And it's also part of another app. So it's like you, in your project, you will have your app target and you also have your app clip target. So okay, and then you
so
can,
it's like a watch OS
yeah,
app
exactly.
or tvOS or something.
Interesting.
And you recently tweeted about this. I think it was, well, it was a few weeks ago, but you tweeted, working on an app clip with React Native, going pretty good so far. Main challenge is refactoring code to allow missing native modules on the clip. And then you kind of go on to describe how you kind of worked around that technical limitation. So I assume that it would just crash if it found something that that you had optimized out of there or something along those lines.
Yeah, so basically in your app clip target, you usually don't want to have all your native dependencies because you're not like, let's say in the main app, I have like Stripe for like payment processing. And in the app clip, I don't want to use Stripe because I don't need it. So I don't want to include the binary for that. Because like you really want to be careful with your app size. So every native dependencies that I wasn't using from the main app, I wouldn't include them in the app clip. So some like a lot of open source libraries had issues with that because they would like try to access constants and stuff like right away, even if the code wasn't like even if you wouldn't call methods on the module, they would still load some code and then crash because it was missing the native module. So I had to make sure that basically the library would never be loaded unless I was in the app clip. So what I did is like you have, for the app clip, you will have two different like entry points. So you have like your index.js for your main app, and then you have like your index app clip .js for the app clip. So in that JS file, I would like inject all the dependencies. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of implemented some like kind of dependency injection where like I would never like require the actual like native module from the code. It would just like try to get like I would have a function that's like get Stripe and then I would call that, and then in the index for the main app I would inject Stripe, and in the app clip I wouldn't. So then I could also check if it was like available or not, and then always use that.
I see. So your index was sort of loading all of these third-party dependencies and then passing it along to any of the subfiles and subfolders that you were using throughout the app then.
Yeah, that would be basically what it did.
Dependency injection. Very cool.
Yeah, it was one of the first time where I'm like, oh, that's kind of this thing you can do that's like useful. But sometimes I feel like sometimes people will start with this huge architecture. They'll be like, oh yeah, I have dependency injection, all these things. I think I remember the first time hearing about it was like in Angular, where they're pretty big about this, I think. But
Yeah, that's a pretty good tweet storm that you posted. I really like it. We should probably include it in the show notes.
So like with the app clips, it's kind of a lightweight version of the app, right? So I was wondering, like, let's say if you have like a, you know, your app needs to be purchased from the app store, or there's like kind of a subscription model. How do you handle that when a user just gets the app clip version of it? How do they purchase the app, I guess?
Oh, that's an interesting question. To be honest, I don't really know, because I don't have a purchasable app or whatever. But there's a flow to like upgrade from the app clip to the regular app. So I assume you can get the app clip for free, and then when you want to get the full app, you get it from the store like you would normally. So like I think in the app clip there's like a link, and then you'll see like get the full app, and then it will take you to the app store. And then if the app is not free, I assume that's where you would actually pay for the full app.
That makes sense. Kind of like a, you know, preview version is available for free. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
Do app clips show up as icons on your home screen?
They don't. They have a spot in the settings where you can, I think you can access all the app clips. I'm not sure. I know you can delete them there. That's because that's when what I do when I want to like reset my app clip. Yeah. So they have some spots in the settings, but they're not like an actual app, and they don't have an icon on the sort. Mm-hmm. They're usually started by an experience, so like by a URL. So either scanning a QR code or a NFC. I actually got NFC tags recently. It's pretty cool. It works really well with. I think it's only though if you have like an iPhone XS or later, it just scans like in the background. So you don't even have to like open like your scanning app or anything. You just have to like tap your phone near a chip when it's unlocked, and it just works. It opens the app clip. It's really, really a cool experience.
So is that the experience you're going for with Third Wave? When I go to a coffee shop, there's going to be an NFC terminal somewhere, and I'll have my loyalty card open up automatically?
Yeah, that's like the optimal flow that we want to go for. Right now, like it's not supported. Like it's only on that would only work on like iOS 14, and if you have an iPhone XS or later, this flow would work. Otherwise, for older phones, you have to go in like your control center or something, and then you click on like scan tag, and then you can scan it. That's on iOS 14. If you're before iOS 14, it's like really bad. Like, I'm not sure what you have to do to scan an NFC chip there.
Gotcha.
It's the first time I have an iPhone 10, and this is the first time that I'm hearing that my phone is too old to do something.
I know, right? It used to be like the cutting edge of phones, and now it's old.
So app clips are like, are they not full screen apps? Are they just kind of partial?
They're full screen apps. It's just they are full screen. I showed you is just the like preview, actually, because like you have this. Okay. It opens like the app clip preview, and then you click like if the app clip actually works. I don't know why it's not working right now, but you would see like an open button, and then you can click and it opens the full app.
Jamin stole my question again, but I was gonna ask about how like the visual layout of app clips and like whether you're constrained to like a fixed height. How does like what kind of challenges did that present in like laying things out?
Actually, when you open the app clip, it's just a regular full screen app, so there's no like restrictions or anything. The like the screen that you saw like when you scan the NFC tag is not customizable at all. Actually, all you can send is like when you create your app clip, you can set up experiences on App Store Connect. And then you can give a URL, and you can set an image, the title, subtitle, and I think the text on the button. There's a few things you can customize. It's actually really bad because you have to customize every URL manually. I don't know if there's an API for it. I haven't like really did research on that. But right now, for each URL that I have that I want an app clip on, I have to go into the App Store config thing, and then like you can set up like the image and all the configuration.
Oh wow, yeah, so it's not a totally customizable UI like a full app.
The card that pops when you scan is not, but the rest is.
I was gonna ask about like the navigation within an app clip. Is there like a restriction on the number of screens you can have, or because it's lightweight, how does that work?
Yeah, so basically you want with app clips, you want like a single feature of your app. Like you won't have like a tab bar with like all the different sections of your app. It will be more like a single flow, right? Like for us, we're using it for the loyalty card. So it will be like I'll get a stamp at the coffee shop and eventually maybe like redeem your free coffee. So it will be like those two flows.
Okay.
So there's no, like in my case, I pretty much took the full app that I have, and I redid the navigation to remove the tab bar and only include the screens that I'm using. So it's actually pretty easy to do with React Native, because you'll have I can reuse all my JavaScript code. Like it's the same project, but the only thing is I have two index files, and then they require different navigation configurations, I guess. And then the one for the app clip only includes the screens that I need.
Okay.
But at the same time, I can reuse the same screens that I use in the app. So the flow for using for getting a stamp in the app is the same as the one that's used in the app clip. So it's the same code. You can do some small tweaks. What I do is I set a global variable like is app clip at the start of my app clip. So then I can check anywhere, like, let's say I don't want to show like a button or something in the app clip because this feature is not supported. I can check this global variable and just like skip this code.
Interesting. Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is how much code can you reuse? But it sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I end up using, like, I haven't customized the flow that much, but I ended up reusing most of the code except navigation, where I made like a specific navigation stack or whatever for the app clip. But for the actual screens, like the UI is basically the same in both, so I can reuse all this code and all the like stuff for like network requests, all the like logging infrastructure and everything is the same. So I was able to reuse most of it.
So it almost sounds like a stripped down version of the original app.
Yeah, exactly. That was actually the challenge because Apple recommends, I don't know if it's a hard limit or not, like I haven't tried to publish an app that's bigger than the limit, but they say they recommend that it stays under 10 megabytes.
Oh, okay. Mm.
So for a native app, that's kind of a challenge. I had like the initial version that I made, I think was like 12 megabytes or something. So what I ended up doing is I removed as much like native dependencies as I could. Like I was one native dependency that I noticed that was really big was the Facebook SDK. So I ended up removing it and using just like I think it's a library called in-app browser or something to do like a web-based OAuth flow for Facebook login instead. Because like the Facebook SDK would like include like a big like 200 megabyte not megabyte kilobytes of strings for like all the different languages for like their share with Facebook buttons. They had a bunch of stuff. It wasn't really necessary just for the Facebook login. Also, they include like all the share stuff. Like the SDK is actually pretty big, so that saved like at least 1 megabyte. Actually, there's another project that I worked on. That's really cool because I noticed the way assets are bundled currently with React Native, they don't take advantage of a thing called app thinning, where the app is like recompiled when you upload it to the store for each device. So let's say you have like an iPhone X, which has like it has like a time X, like 2 times the pixel density or whatever. So it will only include the right assets for the specific device instead of including like all the assets for all the different types of devices. But the way React Native bundles assets currently, it doesn't support this because they're just copied in the app pretty much. Instead of using, if you're doing like regular iOS development, you'll use asset catalogs where you add your assets in like a format and you tell like Xcode, this is the x1, x2, x3 assets, and then it kind of adds some like metadata to it to know which assets are what. And it actually, when you compile your app, it will compile all the assets together into a single file, a single binary file that compiles that compresses really well. So there's a bunch of optimizations that actually that iOS does, well, not iOS, but Xcode does, that React Native apps didn't really get the benefits of. So I worked on using assets catalogs instead of just copying the files directly in the bundle. So that's a PR right now. I'm deploying this to production like soon. So far it works really well. And that helped save like a little bit of space too.
That's a PR to React Native Core?
Yeah, it's a PR to React Native Core and the CLI also. It's like, it might take a while to merge because these kind of stuff is like, it's a bit hard to land sometimes because it's a pretty substantial change. And also Facebook has a lot of like internal stuff that you don't know about. So sometimes it breaks their setup. So I need to find someone at Facebook pretty much to like
champion
the project. I mean, if you're interested in trying it out at Infinite Red or something, let me know. That'd be interesting.
I didn't actually know that that didn't work. We've been using like 1x, 2x, 3x assets, and I didn't realize that that wasn't actually doing anything.
Well, it will use the right asset, but they will all be included in the final app. So you'll be sending more data, but like the app actually uses the right asset, at least. It's just that, you're sending more data to the user when they download the app versus what they
got. Gotcha.
I also know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Another thing I noticed is this, like, it was a pretty good performance improvement because what happens is since Xcode compiles all the assets into a single file, you'll have a lot of less, you'll have a lot less disk I/O for reading files, since it will only load the like one big asset catalog thing. So I noticed, like, I did a little like perf benchmark for fun. Like, it wasn't really scientific or anything, but like I could see a lot of times, like the first time an image would load with the old system, it would like hit the disk, so it would take like pretty much like 10 times the normal time for loading from memory. It's really small number, like it's like not even a millisecond, but still, if you have a large amount of different images, it could make like it could save like maybe like a few milliseconds there and there.
So it's kind of interesting because these app clips may actually, because of the limitations on app size, might help kind of push people toward optimizing the size of even just regular apps in React Native, like this PR. So this is really exciting to hear. So when this lands, would we have to, like once we upgrade to whatever version includes your change, would we have to put our assets somewhere else? Would we have to treat them differently? Or does it just kind of just take them and do the right thing?
The goal is to be as smooth as possible to migrate. So it doesn't require really anything. You'll have to like upgrade your project slightly. But it's all installed automatically at build phase. It will add the assets to the catalog and everything. So you just have to like update your project. So basically the normal thing you would do when you upgrade React Native, right? So we basically just have to add a new asset catalog file to the project. And then when you build, it will add the images to the catalog automatically. So you don't have to do anything. You don't have to like change your code or like have like a different process for managing images. It's really just a small update to the project structure.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that.
I'll link to the PR in our show notes as well, so people can take a look at it.
So is this something we can do for Expo apps as well? Or is this just React Native CLI?
This one is for, I implemented it for the React Native CLI. Okay. So right now it won't work with Expo apps, but if Expo wants to do the same thing with their bundling process, because they have their own way of like including assets, they can. I mean, I know the people at Expo pretty well, so I actually talked with one of their engineer to make sure it wouldn't affect over-the-air updates, because that was one of my concerns. I was like, if I change the way assets are bundled, would it like affect how like over-the-air updates work? But for Expo updates, it wouldn't, because they don't like change the original assets at all. They just download the new assets in a separate location, and they load that if it exists. Otherwise, they fall back on loading the asset that's that has been bundled with the app. So for that, it should work still. But if they make the changes aren't that big. So it's just a matter of copying the assets inside of the asset catalog instead of copying it in the final app.
Okay.
That's really interesting. I also had a question around, not so much around app clip, but more around React Native Safe Area Context. And I wanted to know what motivated you to create it. What was wrong with the previous solution and way of doing things?
Okay, so basically, I created this library for Brent from Expo for because he needed it for React Navigation. So there's like, especially, well, first, maybe I can explain a little bit what the library does. But basically, safe areas are like the areas on your phone that are not safe to display content in. So like notches, navigation bar, status bar, all this stuff. So the goal is to know the dimension of those things, especially now with like all the different types of phones, rounded corners, notches. Those things didn't really exist before. It was all fun when we had all like rectangle screens, but it's not the case anymore. So now we have to think about this. Basically, React Native shipped a view called Safe Area View for a while, but it was iOS only. So what I did is for React Navigation before, they would like hard code like values for like the status bar height and all this stuff, but it wasn't really reliable now that Android also had devices with notches. So yeah, it was basically to solve this, first have support for Android,
yeah,
to be able to remove like all these hard-coded height from React mm-hmm. Navigation for the status bar, like when you have like the navigation bar at the top of your app, like React Navigation has to like do this UI, and you have to make sure that you add the right spacing at the top of the navigation bar. So it was the motivation, yeah.
So both platforms give you the native insets? Are they both native? Like they both require native modules for iOS and Android?
Yeah, both okay. iOS and Android have a native API for those. Okay. iOS has it since they introduced the iPhone X, which was the first phone with like the notch. I think it's like iOS 11 maybe or something.
Yeah.
So there's that, and then on Android they have an API. They have like two or three different APIs actually. On Android it's a little bit more complex, I guess, the implementation. They added notches later. So they had an API before for like, I don't remember how it's called, but they have an API for that. And then they also added a different API to get the size of notches. We actually don't even use it because the first API that they introduced also support notches, so it's fine. We don't need to like use both. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the code is like, it's on Android, it's really hard. Like I often get issues about like, I have this weird phone and then it doesn't work in some cases. Like I'm having a little bit of a struggle with those. It's not that bad, but still there's still, even though it's better, there's still some issues on certain phones. And like sometimes there's mm-hmm. also different like modes on Android. Like you have like the full screen mode or something, the immersive mode. There's like a million mode that I've never heard of. I also got an issue about Android Auto recently, which I never used before. I didn't even know it existed. So someone who was trying to use my library on like a car.
That's cool.
Wow.
So
wow. Was it Tesla?
No. Well Android actually has their own like car thing. Like it's like mm-hmm. Android car, or I don't remember how it's called, but they have their own car framework, but the library wouldn't work there, I think. Mm. So that's
really interesting. And it actually gives you a view that you can use. It's just called Safe Area View. It gives safe area insets applied as padding or margin around the outside.
Yeah, so basically there's two APIs. It's actually mm-hmm. a lot more flexible also than the previous solution in React Native. Mm-hmm. React Native only included Safe Area View, which always applied the paddings. The library actually started off as... that's why the name Safe Area Context. It's actually started mm-hmm. off as a context provider to get the insets in JS with the hook, I think. Well, no, it was before hook, so it probably mm-hmm. had a provider API or something like this before. But now we support hooks, so you can mm-hmm. basically you will add a provider at the top of your app that will there will be a view that covers the full screen, and then it will tell you when you use the hook in other components, it will tell you the insets for this view, so the part that overlaps like the places where you shouldn't have content, right? So like the notch, if the notch is overlapping the view, it will tell you the top overlaps for 20 pixels or something.
Cool.
What's cool is you can also have multiple providers. So let's say you have multiple screens. Like one use case that's really nice is with the new modal style on iOS. I think it's iOS 13 or something, where it doesn't cover the full screen, right? Now mm-hmm. the models on iOS. So you want to have like one provider for each screen, because if you're inside a model, then it won't cover the notch, so you shouldn't add spacing for the offset. So the library handles these cases pretty well, or you can just use the Safe Area View, which handles everything. It will apply padding automatically, or the hook if mm-hmm. you need the values in JS, so it will return you the top, bottom left, or whatever, and then you can do like some calculation for some reason. Sometimes I like to do a max. So I on like a device that doesn't have a notch, I want like 8 pixels of padding. But mm-hmm. if it has a notch, I want I want to go all the way to the notch size. So I'll do like a max between like 8 and the notch size. So that if there's no notch, then it will have a small padding. And if there's a notch, it will use the notch padding. So you can add some logic in JS also if you're using the hook API, which is nice.
Cool.
So this has a native native component for both iOS and Android. Is that because there are actual native APIs that will tell you all this information?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, the native APIs on iOS, mm-hmm. there's like a prop on views that will tell you the safe area insets for this particular view. So depending on where the view is on the screen, it will tell you where if it covers the notch or stuff. And on Android, there's also a similar API where you can get the insets. And we also have to support older SDKs where we kind of emulate the safe area with other APIs. So there's actually quite a bit of native code that we're using. So there's no like hard-coded value really of like, we don't assume that the device has a status bar of 20 pixels or something. We really get the actual value from the native APIs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have noticed a huge, I've noticed that dealing with safe area has been less of a pain for me when I used your library versus before.
Yeah, totally agree. The original safe area view was very, like, it sort of locked you in and the behavior was unpredictable and it felt like you couldn't really control what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, safe area context has been a much easier experience.
I started doing iOS development with iOS, I don't even remember. I do know, though, that there was only one type of iPhone screen and it had a fixed size. So you would literally say, okay, my app is 320 points wide and I need 44 points at the top for my navigation header because, you know, why would that ever change? And then the iOS 5 or the iPhone 5 came out and they adjusted the height. They didn't adjust the width. They just adjusted the height. And it was like, oh no, now we have to actually pay attention to the height of this app. But, you know, I had dealt with browsers before with different sizes and things like that. So this felt like it was super, like, building apps on easy mode because, you know, if you just always had one specific, and nobody ever built for Android, so, you know, you just build iOS apps for a very specific size. Just different times now.
Well, people are using it in cars now, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I noticed that, while I was looking at your third wave GitHub, I noticed you also authored the React Native Keyboard Aware Scroll View. I actually used that recently. Really want to thank you for that because I had a lot of issues with like the keyboard scrolling. Like there we had like a whole bunch of text inputs inside a scroll view and it just was driving me nuts. And I found this library. Do you still support this or are you kind of done with it?
I think it's just a fork, actually. Oops.
Whoops.
I don't want to take credit for it.
Okay. Wait, I see a commit from you.
I probably committed something. Like I usually I fork a lot of libraries and do small changes.
Okay.
And probably fix something. Usually I try to upstream my changes, but maybe in this case I didn't. I don't know. Or maybe okay. I just left it as it.
It looks like it came from.
I have a lot of forks.
It looks like a company out of Spain.
APSL.
Thank you, APSL, and thanks for those comments too.
Yeah.
It's definitely a big headache dealing with like the scroll mm-hmm. view issues.
There's all these little utilities and people kind of working in obscurity, making them. There's not a lot of. I mean, I maintain the React Native Web View, and that's like one of the bigger sort of third-party systems out there. It is not a particularly fun thing to work on. It's like its own whole thing. It's way more work than all of our other open source combined,
wow.
Just Web View by itself. And it's also the thing that people pretty much only notice when it annoys them.
Yeah.
What, you mean people aren't filing issues saying how amazing it is?
not too many, no.
Yeah, I've gotten one of those at least. It's cool. I mean,
it's cool.
Why not? It's actually kind of the same way with Safaria now. Like, it was a fun thing to develop at the start, but now it's kind of in maintenance mode more. So I feel like I'm spending most of my time like answering issues, trying to find some deep, weird bug on weird devices. I mean, it's a different kind of like, it's different work definitely when you're like developing a new library and getting started versus like maintaining it and making sure you're not breaking things for other people while trying to fix the problems that some other people have.
I have a philosophy around that, Janik, because I've been doing open source for a long time, like you. And my philosophy is I'm going to make it work really well for my use case, and then I'm going to try to review pull requests in a timely manner for other people's use cases. I am not going to investigate their problems for free. They can pay me to do that. That's fine. But I'm not going to do it for free. And so that's been a pretty freeing thing for me, because it's like, I built this, you know, for this use case and it's not working for this other use case. Awesome. It's open source. Please create a pull request. I'll review it. I am volunteering some of my time to help, but it's more in terms of reviewing it, testing it, making sure it works before I merge it back in. It's not, I'm not going to like, you know, really deep dive in and try to figure it out. That took a big load off, because when I felt like I had to solve other people's problems all the time, you know, you're just working for free a lot and it just becomes a recipe for burnout.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the hardest parts of our current open source culture.
Yeah.
Is there's not quite enough contributing and there's a lot of just using and demanding perfection.
Yes.
Yeah, I always noticed I feel like a lot of people are scared of like their node modules folder. It's a thing I've always been curious about. I don't know, but like I feel like sometimes people have a problem in their dependencies and they're like, oh, I can't touch this. Like, go open an issue on GitHub. But like sometimes it's really not that like bad to like just go deep into your node modules, just check, log something. I don't know, just have a quick look at the code. Sometimes the problem isn't like super like hard to like figure out. You can just add logs in your node module. It's what's great about JavaScript versus like other like compiled languages. You have the source right there. So you can check, you can like open your project in Xcode or something, add the breakpoint. I said, try to figure out, like at least try a little bit. Like I'm not saying that it's always easy. Sometimes it's like really, really, really hard. But I feel like just don't be afraid of your node modules or like your dependencies. Like it's actually like just people like you and me and everyone that's like that contributes like these libraries. Like that's kind of, for me at least, like it was always something that I liked, and it really helped me become like a better engineer, I guess. Not being afraid to like dive deep into like the issues that are not necessarily my code but other people's code.
We've talked about patch package before on this podcast, but I think this is a good shout out for that. You can play around in your node modules folder, but then if you want to persist those changes, if maybe they haven't been merged upstream or something, you can just create a patch and apply it with patch package, and then it applies it anytime you run yarn, which is very cool. But I totally agree, Janik. I actually did it just a couple days ago. I dove into my node modules, found an issue that was like causing some pain for me, edited just right in the source there and just tested to make sure it worked, and then submitted a PR upstream. Now the offending code happened to be mine upstream, but in this case it was kind of a similar thing.
There's something I want to ask. Is there something that you know about in React Native core maybe that is less known by the public that you think is worth mentioning? So whether it's a component or, because I know that you've made me discover a few things that were not really documented in the past. So
What were some of those things, Harris?
So you showed me the pressable, it's like bounceable or something. It was like this.
Oh yeah, the touchable bounce.
Touchable bounce.
I've never heard of that.
It's not even exported from React Native. Okay. It's just there. So you have to import it from the full path inside React Native. But it works well. I used it. It's a cool component, but you really have to know the React Native source. And like,
what does it do?
It's like, when you press a button and like it bounces. It's like this kind of feedback for touchable. It's like a touchable with this bounce feedback, like spring type.
Yeah, it's actually quite nice. It's there, but it's not documented. And Janik told me about it, and I literally used it for Uplet, my previous startup. And it's still that's still the code that's there. It's using this touchable bounce component.
I'm going to publish a library that says that it has, it's like React Native button bounce. And then all it does is reach in and export React.
There might be one already that does that. Or someone just copied the code, because if you want to be safe, right, to make sure like Facebook doesn't break it because they decide to change the, where the file is. But yeah, I don't mind using these internal API, because anyway, I keep my React Native pre up to date, and I don't mind like playing around with this stuff. But yeah, it's one of those. There's this. I don't know if there's other stuff that I can think of. There's one little unknown module that I actually worked on. It's called like dev menu, where you can add buttons, like custom buttons from JS in the dev menu. So let's say like my app has like a secret dev screen where you have like some information about like, I don't know, which API I'm using. I added code to like navigate to any screen. Pretty much like, I guess stuff you'd have, you have this with ReactOtron, right? It's called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a bit like a mini ReactOtron inside my app that I built for fun.
That's fun.
But you can like add like to the, when you open the dev menu from React Native, I added a button there where it's like dev screen or whatever. So there's an API for that. I think it's called like dev menu or something like this.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I didn't know.
So you can add like any button that you want from on the menu. So if there's like dev actions that you need to add to your app, you can check it out. I'll try to find
that. Genius.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I didn't know about that. I think what's cool is like whenever I see Janik work, he's always running his own build of React Native. Like he you know, so that's a really cool way to discover these things.
Yeah,
and I actually started doing that after a while, except running it on the Android version was really hard. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using my own fork of React Native in my apps, because I usually do like I usually have changes that I want to make, and I don't want to wait until my PR is merged. So and also I have a couple of changes actually that I won't upstream because they're like not good enough to be upstream. Like I use a different image implementation that I made quickly. That's not really upstreamable because Facebook won't like change the image implementation anyway on iOS. But yeah, I think I'm also building from source on Android, so I think that makes it a lot easier to work with Android when you build from source, because you can actually change the code. Like I said before, like what's kind of not bad, but like what's annoying about if you're using just React Native normally on Android is that it uses precompiled jars, which is great for build speed. Like I'm always amazed by how fast it builds on Android when I use like another app, because it uses the precompiled React Native. But if you're building from source, it builds really slow, but you can make changes in the actual React Native core code.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anyways, if you're using a fork, you kind of have to build from source anyway. But that's something I've been using.
You like living on the edge a little bit. You know, there's actually some value in that though. Like exposing yourself to some pain kind of forces you to learn. You know, once you hit those points, you got to go in there and dig in and figure out. And it just gives you this much better mental map of what's happening under the hood in the tools that you use. I get that for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think actually like it maybe it sounds like it's living on the edge, but like React Native is insanely stable. Like Facebook lives on the edge of React Native. So they run master all the time. So I've had my own the issues that I have are usually more like related to like the open source version of React Native. Well, there's no open source version, but like the open source projects are structured slightly differently, and sometimes bugs would happen if you're using React Native from outside Facebook versus how they use it internally. like, I just want to make it clear, there's no like two versions of React Native. Like Facebook uses exactly the same code that's on the repo. It's just they have some internal modules. I think they use a different CLI though for like building the app and everything. Like they don't use the community CLI. There's some differences there, but there's no like Facebook version. I know some people will say, like their Facebook runs a different version of React Native, but they don't. they have some experiments, I guess, that aren't open source. But
yeah,
I don't want to be quoted out of context.
I'm just curious, are there any like contribution docs or something that actually explains how to run React Native from source if people want to try that?
Yeah, there is. I can send you the link, I guess.
Okay, we can include it in the show notes. That'd be awesome.
Because I think that might be an interesting thing to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to get a better understanding and like tweak things in the source code and see what changes.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, I've never thought about doing it that way. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, the main thing is you need to have the Android NDK installed because there's a lot of C++ code that needs to be compiled.
That's the native development kit.
Yeah.
Right? NDK. Yeah.
That there's the SDK and then there's the NDK. But right now it's pretty easy to install also because you can install it right from Android Studio now. Before you had to like download it somewhere, get the link, get the right version. Now you can just get the latest version on with Android Studio and it usually works pretty well. And
okay,
there's a guide somewhere.
Perfect.
Very cool. I think we could keep asking you questions all day, Janique, but we're kind of getting to the end of this episode. So we might have to have you on in the future sometime to do some follow-up questions. But so let's go into the next part of our podcast, which is weird bugs. This is the part of the podcast where we talk about weird bugs that we have either encountered ourselves or we have seen other people encounter on our team, and we just share them with everybody. So who has a weird bug? Anybody have a good weird bug story here? So if nobody else does, I can go. So a few days ago, Kevin, who works on our team, posted just a little heads up in our engineering channel. This isn't really a weird bug, but it's a gotcha that you should really pay attention to if you are working in React Web or React Native. He was saying that yesterday and the day before, I was fighting a mysterious undefined prevdeps.length error. It came with a warning that suggested checking the rules of hooks, but best I could tell, I wasn't violating any of the rules. But so it turned out that he was actually violating the rule against changing the order of hooks, because he actually had an early return before one of his hooks. So when the early return would trigger, it wouldn't actually have the hook that was being defined after the early return. So you have to make sure if you have hooks in a component that they all happen before any sort of conditional logic that might change the order or the number of hooks. And React is very good about picking up on this and saying, hey, you have a problem here. In this case, the error wasn't very helpful, but essentially, you have to make sure that if you are returning from a function, you know, a function component, or you have like an if statement or something like that, that it doesn't affect your hooks. You always want to define all of those up front.
It has to basically render the same amount of hooks, right?
Yes. If you want to be able to do it after an early return, you have to do it in like a sub component. You actually have to move that hook into a sub component and then it's okay. So that's something to keep an eye out for. I know a lot of people have used hooks, probably kind of know this rule a little bit, but just keep an eye out for it. If you have an early return, that does count as a conditional.
That makes sense.
That's a good tip.
Is the, because I know there's a ESLint plugin for like rules of hooks. Does it not detect early returns? I don't know if it could have been possible to spot it with a linter.
I did not ask Kevin.
I feel like a linter wouldn't pick up on that because
maybe it's not smart enough to run it.
Hard to say. I do know that there is that linter and it has caught things in the past. I don't know if Kevin is using the linter rule or not. That's a very good question. We'll link to that linter rule as well in the show notes.
That'd be great if it could detect early returns.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those gotchas that you know, hooks are amazing and they have this really kind of cool feeling, but you do have to know quite a few sort of just kind of rules of thumb around them because of how they're implemented. You can't just use them sort of willy-nilly.
Yeah, I've had a few. Like the worst are like this tail closure bugs where you'd I've had like one or two of those. I try to avoid as much as possible, like but sometimes it happened a few times where I was like, oh, that's the bug that everyone talks about, like the like stale you'd see like an old version of your variable somehow because you have like wrong dependencies or something, I think, in the hook. I don't remember exactly what the bug was, but like it was the bug that everyone was talking about. That's like, oh, that's one of the gotchas of hook, and actually hit it a couple times.
We do still use hooks in our apps, but there's a lot of this that we kind of avoid by using MobX State Tree and MobX React Lite. It kind of gets around having to think about those rules as much. There are rules with that too, but they're probably a little simpler.
Yeah, I think like Julian is one of the engineers at Infinite Red, mentioned that something about passing an observable array as a dependency. I think there was maybe like an issue there.
Totally. Yep.
You have to slice it.
Yeah, that's definitely a gotcha there as well. Although that had to do with an interplay between a gotcha of MobX State Tree and a gotcha of
hooks,
of React hooks. So the two interplayed there a bit. Cool. Thanks so much, Janik. It was awesome to have you on, dropping some of your immense knowledge here on our podcast. It's been a lot of fun. And like I said, there are many more questions that we didn't get to. I had a bunch of Robin notes that I could have asked those questions on. Sorry about that, Robin. But really appreciate you coming on today, and very much looking forward to having you on in the future sometime. Where can someone find you on Twitter, Janik?
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show. And of course, if you want to hear me again, I'll have some fun come again.
Awesome.
You can follow me on Twitter at Janik Duplessis, like my full name. Maybe you can link it somewhere because it's not super obvious how it's spelled.
It'll be in the show notes.
Basically follow me on Twitter. That's pretty much where I post stuff once in a while.
Perfect.
Or check out my GitHub, I guess. You should also check out my app, Third Wave. Maybe you can add a link to that too. I think it's a cool, even if you're not like using or you're not into coffee, I think it's a cool example of a good like React Native app, like,
for sure,
that you can I've had comments about people that were like, oh, I didn't know your app was made in React Native, because like I think it's pretty much as good as like a native app. So
it's always good to get examples of really nice production React Native apps.
Yeah, I'm also open also to like sharing stuff if you're like, I know I've shared a lot of stuff with Aris before when he was working on Uplet. Yeah. So like if there's something in my app that you like and you're like, oh, how do you make this? I like sharing knowledge about what I work on.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. Third Wave is like I think I even ran your custom React Native build once. But it's a really good example of a really smooth React Native app. I actually still like, I often look at it just to like inspire myself. Then I bug Janik and I'm like, how did you do that? Or like even the images, if you actually try Third Wave on a web, and Janik can explain it way better than me, but it uses Gatsby, and I believe you use the same image component, right?
Wow.
So
I guess that could be a subject for another time.
For sure.
I've built a like kind of design system component library where I can reuse a lot of code and use the same abstractions on the web and on React Native.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks again. And of course, people can find us online. You can find our Twitter at React Native RDIO. We were one letter short constrained, so we had to drop the A there. You can find Harris at Bruno Stman, BRUNOSTMANN, Aditi at Aditi Ravi, AdHithiRavi, and Robin at Robin_Heinz with an E on Twitter. And then you can find me at Jamin Holmgren, just first and last name. And hit us up if you like this episode, if you have any ideas for future episodes, and if you have any questions, of course, feel free to tag us on that. Really appreciate everybody coming along. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.